Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business, and today we speak with Steve Crystal, the president of TableMax, one of the world's leading developers of electronic table games. Crystal has a long background in gaming on both the operator and supplier side. With TableMax, he hopes to help the company capitalize on the rapidly growing electronic table games field. He discusses the company's products and expansion plans and why he believes TableMax is in the right place at the right time with the right products. He spoke with me at his offices in Las Vegas in March. Steve Crystal, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's great to see you. Your new company for you anyway, TableMax, has really started to take off. Give us a brief history of the company and how you got involved in it.
Sure. TableMax actually has been in existence for over 10 years, and as you see with a lot of gaming technology companies, the barriers of entry are tremendous because of the licensing that's required, and because most of the technologies are proprietary, it takes a long period of time to not only develop the intellectual property and protect it, but also to develop products that will get the proper certifications. And actually, the space that TableMax occupies by its very name is electronic table games. And what's important to note about electronic table games is that it is the fastest growing sector within gaming equipment, within the gaming equipment sector. And the reason that is because of the overall trend we've seen in gaming technology towards the convergence of electronics on the gaming floor. And most of that has been driven by the need for efficiency in terms of the transactions that occur within a gaming floor. And so it's only natural that you would see that evolution occur within table games. It costs a casino approximately $600,000 a year to staff a traditional felt table. Mm-hmm. And when you consider the fact that we now have in TableMax electronic table games that have proven content like blackjack, progressive blackjack, bonus Texas Hold'em, games like Caribbean Stud and Caribbean Draw, games that have performed very well with customers in the traditional felt format, if you combine that with an electronic platform that saves that overhead and allows the casino to offer bonusing and wide area progressive jackpots, mm-hmm. you have a very powerful tool to create a crossover product which can compete with slot machines and can compete certainly very favorably with traditional felt games.
Sure.
And so 10 years ago, the founders of TableMax were a visionary, and they saw an opportunity to be on the front edge of that convergence of electronics. Mm-hmm. And so they methodically protected the intellectual property around doing electronic table gaming. They acquired rights from PGIC, mm-hmm. and their predecessor, Micon, mm-hmm. of such titles as was mentioned, known titles. And they created a platform that is very player friendly. And so with all of that passage of time and my recent involvement as an investor in various gaming technology plays, I had been involved with one of our competitors named DigiDeal, mm-hmm. which is actually a dealer-led electronic table game, and that company was purchased by IGT. And so I saw the power of that product line, and I had first been approached 4 years ago when we operated the casinos to look at the TableMax product, and when I was looking for a new investment to make, I reacquainted with the TableMax folks and found that they had passed the major thresholds. They mm-hmm. had gotten GLI approval. They had gotten their product in the marketplace, mm-hmm. and their product was performing equal to or better than the best slot machines that were on the gaming floor. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that they had a winner.
And is that per position that they're performing better?
Right, yeah. And that's the right calculation. The way we look at, the way we compare an electronic table game to a slot machine is on a per position basis. Mm-hmm. And one example would be an installation that we have in Oklahoma at Bordertown, mm-hmm. which is in Tulsa. And you know, we're performing at in excess of $215 win per day per position, which compares with the best the slot product that they have. Mm-hmm. What's unique about the configuration of the TableMax system is that it occupies 20% less square footage than what would be occupied by a bank of five slot machines. Mm-hmm. And so in markets like California, where they're focused on the number of gaming positions, mm-hmm. and where they count electronic tables as each position is a separate device,
right.
then what we have to do is be able to make the argument that we can compete on a square footage, win per square footage mm-hmm. efficiency basis with slot machines.
Sure.
And we're showing that we can.
Okay. Well, let's walk through each of the current products. I guess you can combine Caribbean Stud with Caribbean Draw. Obviously, this was one of the most one of the first new table games that was introduced in the casino. What was that, back in the early 90s, I guess it was?
That's correct.
And then, of course, the electronic version came out. How did TableMax acquire that, and what is the status of the game itself?
Right. Well, I think, you know, you've hit on it. Caribbean Stud has, you know, internationally is one of the most popular games since it's been introduced. The electronic rights were acquired through a maze of ownership changes that ultimately passed through Micon. But what's significant about the content that TableMax has acquired over time, mm-hmm. as you know, content, the games, is basically a mathematical formulation.
Right.
And those are protected by patents. Mm-hmm. Those patents do run out. And mm-hmm. so a lot of the games that we have, their patents will run out, and people can come up with games that have the same math. Mm-hmm. But what doesn't run out is the name,
right.
the trademark. And so the real value is not just the math, mm-hmm. but the name. And the name Caribbean Stud, the name Progressive Blackjack, the name Bonus Texas Hold'em, they have cachet mm-hmm. With what we see as a new customer that's emerging, a crossover customer who might not feel comfortable playing a traditional table game, who is not challenged by the prospect of playing a video slot machine, mm-hmm. But who enjoys sitting down in a communal setting and playing these types of games. And so that's unique, their name, their trademark, but also the fact that each of these games was developed with a side bet opportunity. So in addition to the base game, the player has the ability to wager an additional amount mm-hmm. in order to participate in a payoff event. And further, each of the games can tie into a wide area progressive. In other words, we contribute a portion of the side bet to a cumulative jackpot, which creates excitement on the game because you're no longer gambling just to win odds on a particular hand, but gambling for a fairly significant jackpot. Mm-hmm. And so the history of the evolution of electronic table games, if you look, for example, at Shuffle Master, one of our competitors, you know, they control a lot of traditional table games, mm-hmm. and they are moving those onto the electronic format, but they don't control the games that we do. And
right.
In fact, they bought from PGIC the felt version mm-hmm. of these games, but not the electronic. And
okay.
so that's an advantage we have. In the case of a DigiDeal, which was purchased by IGT, again, they are in a position of either having to come up with their own games mm-hmm. or create new games, or to license. In fact, they've licensed from TableMax mm-hmm. before my involvement, Texas Hold'em.
Okay.
So what that means is that ultimately TableMax is in the business of putting its own platform out there mm-hmm. and putting its own games on that platform and offering progressive jackpots, but also has a business strategy strategically to license its content to its competitors, and in essence, through one way or another, control more of the footprint in the casino floors that are out there.
Okay. Now, so Shuffle Master controls the felt version of Caribbean Stud.
Yes, they don't control the felt version. They control the felt version of Progressive Blackjack.
Okay.
of Caribbean draw and of bonus Texas Hold'em.
Okay.
The Caribbean stud actually goes through a different lineage that didn't pass through, that did not pass through PGIC. But naturally, you know, Shuffle Master is very formidable because they are very active in the table game sector.
Right.
And are dealing with those customers on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. What we're finding that's unique is that it's not necessarily the table games, the head of table games, that is the ultimate decision maker, because some people view the electronic table game as a crossover product. And so you're often dealing with either a combination of table games and slots, or someone at the GM level who's looking at the overall efficiency of the gaming floor.
Okay. So do you license Caribbean Stud then into casinos? The felt version is what I'm talking about?
No, we don't. The felt version is controlled by separate companies. So we are not involved at this point in anything other than electronic gaming.
Okay.
I think where we go with that is ultimately is to over time acquire more titles, and also to expand the platform beyond the notion of card games. In other words, the whole notion of community gaming is that there's some value in creating an environment where many people can play, in essence, on one device and have that shared experience. And probably the best example of that that has been in the marketplace is the Wheel of Fortune game that you see with 20 positions, which last time I heard was performing, you know, in some cases in excess of $400 win per day, which far outperforms a traditional slot machine.
Sure.
Just shows the value of the premise of moving to electronics in a community gaming setting.
Okay. Let's talk about the two blackjack games. You have Bonus Blackjack and Progressive Blackjack. I imagine these are, again, a transition game. Somebody who might not be comfortable at a blackjack game can sit down and learn the game on these electronic games.
That's a good question. First, let me say that the math and the rules are no different than the felt version. So, and I bring that up because you can go into, for example, a slot bar and play a video blackjack or play video Texas Hold'em.
Right.
And all you're doing is playing with slot machine odds. These are true odds to the felt versions.
Right.
So in that sense, they're the same. The difference in mentality is that when you play at a live table, you're often playing with experienced players and who often have a certain sense of what the etiquette is and who often, you know, become a disgruntled or dissatisfied if someone is just learning the game or having to be instructed on a regular basis by the dealer. And so clearly an electronic version of blackjack, or even a better example might be Texas Hold'em, where there's a very high name recognition and people watch it on TV and they say, geez, I'd like to play, but the thought of sitting in a poker room with what they view as professionals or professional amateurs is very threatening. And so this gives people the chance to be exposed to content that they're aware of in an environment where they can play with their friends. And same math, same rules, but without those intimidating factors.
What's the difference between Bonus and Progressive?
Basically the difference is the rules are set to award, in the case of the side bet, a certain payout based on certain combinations, and so they just have different payout rules. And different math, you know, but in essence, they are games. One of the things we're finding, which is very good for the operator, is that no matter what version you're playing, the games in the electronic version are holding a higher percentage than the traditional felt games. And, you know, part of that may be explained by the fact that these are less educated or seasoned players, and part of it is explained by the fact that the electronics allows for quicker play and therefore more efficiency and therefore higher hold percentages for the casino. So in that sense, the casino is a winner. it, to the extent that you're able to provide jackpot opportunities, then the there's a perceived value on the part of the player.
Sure.
And therefore the player is perceives that he can be, or he or she can be, a winner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can the operator set the rules of the games, for instance, if they want it to be more player friendly, allow it to stand on soft 17s? And
yeah, that's a fair comment. Because of the way the process is for approving games, mm-hmm. so when you go through and introduce an electronic table game, you have to get the hardware, the physical platform, approved, and then each piece of software, i.e. the content, has to be approved.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no limit to the versions. It's just an approval process. What we do allow the casino to control without going through that GLI or BMM or whatever approval mm-hmm. agency you're using, what we do allow them to do is to change the denominations, mm-hmm. minimum bets. And so in that sense, there is the ability to have some flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, and it's not in our current version, which we call Model D,
uh-huh.
is a five-position configurable game with a ticket in, ticket out at each position, player tracking at each position,
mm-hmm.
and coinless, dealerless, chip, you know, paperless, so mm-hmm. to speak. The future versions will allow to change from Caribbean Stud to Progressive Blackjack to Bonus Texas Hold'em based upon the market demand,
mm-hmm.
the time of day of operation. It will also allow the ability to have configurable buttonry,
mm-hmm.
so that in essence the change from one format to the other is seamless. So
mm-hmm.
that would be in essence the version of server-based gaming for electronic table games.
Okay.
You could imagine in the future a situation, and this is why companies like IGT have gotten into this space, but content is content is content, and we talk about convergence. What that means is there's no reason why at some point in time, depending upon what you're trying to do, you could take a electronic table game, and because you're holding, let's say, a slot tournament, in essence, create poker,
mm-hmm.
your electronic poker, to occur on each screen in a tournament setting.
Mm-hmm.
So content is content is content, and you're basically turning that into a bank of slot machines.
Mm-hmm.
That's the future, and that's why people are moving towards electronics, even in the table game space.
I see. When the player plays the game and you know, they adhere to basic strategy and blackjack, are they getting the same advantages they would at a regular blackjack table, or are they at the whim of the random number generator?
No, it plays just like a traditional. So I think it's a four deck
mm-hmm.
shoe. So it'd be the same as if you were playing a four deck shoe in a casino.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, the more decks you have, the ability to be an advantage player,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, is minimized.
Right.
Still can happen. And there are still systems to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And there are still ways to do better than with a certain
sure.
skill and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But it plays just like a traditional table game. That's an interesting point, because in some cultures, in some jurisdictions, you know, there is still the notion that they want to feel the cards,
mm-hmm.
that something electronic is not playing to the
right.
true odds.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is an education process that we need to go through when we're not only selling the product
mm-hmm.
and installing it, but in also educating the customer base. One of the things I do hear, by the way, is that particularly higher rollers, as I said, these machines can be configurable,
mm-hmm.
but one of the things I hear from higher rollers is the fact that they like the game because it plays faster than a traditional, let's say, blackjack
mm-hmm.
table, and they don't have to tip the dealer if they win.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, until we went out in the marketplace, we wouldn't know that would be a reaction.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Oklahoma. That's obviously a Class II market. Are your games applicable for Class II markets?
They are. It's a maze of... you know, we went to Oklahoma because at the time we went, it was a Class II. It is,
mm-hmm.
as you know, it has
right.
since moved to something that they call, you know, 3. Something.
Yeah, I don't know what they call
what
it.
What they
anymore,
call it, but they call it 2.9, I think.
Right.
And so, yes, the game is well suited for markets that, that in essence, provide a regulatory reason that they can't have traditional table games, felt games, so the electronic version has been sanctioned.
Right.
So Pennsylvania is an example, California is an example of where there are immediate opportunities. Internationally, places like Macau, the demand is being driven by the shortage of dealers. So they have the people coming into the casino who want to play certain games, Baccarat, to name one, Pai-Gal, to name another. But so they want to have the product, but they don't have a dealer, so an electronic table game is a solution. In places like South America, Mexico, in some other jurisdictions, there's a combination of you know, no real clear regulatory environment, and also the security that comes with having an electronic pay ticket in, ticket out process where you don't have issues of fraud or trying to steal from the casino, trying to, in essence, you know, take the advantage away from the casino.
Right, right.
So there's a lot of different reasons why the game is attractive depending on the market.
Now, how do you sell these games? Are they do you buy boxes and put them into boxes, or do you have a partner who manufactures it for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. We do, basically, TableMax is a intellectual property holding company with a management team geared to, in essence, developing and marketing and selling the product. We are currently working with a outsourced manufacturer in Salt Lake City who will manufacture the game. They can manufacture one TableMax table a day, so far that far exceeds whatever possible demand there could be for any electronic table game provider.
At least now.
At least now. We do have an inventory of machines that that we are in the process of depleting. But yes, we use outsourced distributors. For example, we work with Nova in Oklahoma. We work with KP Gaming, which is a specialist with certain Native American tribes in California. We have a partnership with Octavian in Eastern Europe and in parts of Asia and in parts of South America. So we use a combination of an internal sales effort, outsourced manufacturers, and distributors who not only help sell the product but also help to service the client relationship on a going-forward basis.
Okay. Most of the games we've talked about right now have been developed elsewhere, you know, not by TableMax. Is your business model to continue to acquire licenses for existing table games, or are you going to develop new games?
That's a great point. We are finalizing a partnership with G3, which is a well-known game developer based in Las Vegas, and initially their job is to really focus on our immediate content needs, finishing up the submission of our existing titles through the GLI process. You know, there are games, like in certain markets, like I mentioned Baccarat and Pai-Gal, we do need to either develop or acquire titles that will meet those market needs. We are actively talking to other people in the traditional table game space who own content that would be suitable for electronics. So we are really tackling it from every level, including, I'll give you a good example. I mean, Mexico, for example, allows table games to the extent they operate off of a bingo metric. Well, that has to be developed.
Right.
Can it be developed? Sure, anything can be developed. And so we do it through every means, including developing our own content.
Okay. The European market has obviously been a very hotbed for electronic table games for quite some time. Why do you think European markets develop this more quickly than other markets?
I think they develop because, number one, they're space constrained. So electronic table games allow them to offer that in dealing with their limited space. Number two, they tend to be less regulated markets. So you have a lot of manufacturers out there. If I think I saw you at the ICE show, and probably the largest square footage of that convention was devoted to electronic tables.
No question.
Electronic roulette, electronic go down the line. Well, a lot of that is our companies that aren't licensed, but they can do business in parts of Europe where that's not required.
Right.
So that's part of why you've seen it.
Yeah, no question. We mentioned that new players are not intimidated by these games. Do you have any evidence that these players eventually do become table game players, or do they just kind of gravitate to these machines because they're very comfortable there?
Yeah, good. That's another good question. I mean, I think the more likely outcome, what we're seeing is that the players, and I think part of this is such a new development,
mm-hmm.
that I don't think any company really can say that they know for sure.
Sure.
I mean, they know that year over year the demand increases for electronic table games, and they have somewhat of a handle anecdotally on who their customer is.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we have a full handle on it. I would say that the more likelihood is that, much like other, like in traditional slot games, I think the more likelihood is that traditional table game players over time will become comfortable,
mm-hmm.
with electronic table games. And the best analogy that I can think of is if you remember something as simple as ticket in, ticket out, and that the concept of putting coins in a machine and then collecting the coins in bins and then cashing them in, there were a lot of people who adapted to that quickly,
mm-hmm.
and there were just as many people who refused, who said it's not the same experience unless I hear the coins drop.
Right.
And then over time, the gaming companies simulated the sound of coins dropping. They showed how quick and easy the transaction could be and reliable.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing really could be said. I think it's more likely that the trend will be towards more acceptance of electronic table games,
mm-hmm.
and traditional players moving there than it would necessarily be training a new class,
yep.
of people to play. The only exception to that might be what we're seeing, which is the continued growth of card rooms, I mean, of poker,
mm-hmm.
Poker within the casino, Texas Hold'em. And I think part of that is explained just by its social,
mm-hmm.
relevance, and the fact that it's it has some merit beyond just, the pure gambling aspect.
Sure, sure. Do you think this is such a dynamic time in the gaming industry? I mean, things are changing rapidly, especially on the slot floor. Do you think that table games, electronic table games, are going to become a larger part of the slot floor overall?
I think the best way to answer that is if you look at what's been happening, and particularly in the destination resorts. We saw the last decade a change from having gaming predominate the revenue picture to non-gaming, hotel rooms, retail, mm-hmm. restaurants. And so casinos adjusted, and the new casinos you're seeing built are built with that in mind. So similarly, I think on the gaming floor, I think what's happening is if you believe, as most people do, in the convergence of electronics on a gaming floor, and you believe that it will be analyzed no different than you analyze the utilization you get out of a retail space,
mm-hmm.
or a entertainment space, then presumably where the floor will go is where the operators feel they're getting the most efficiency and utilization.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that electronic table games can be successful without necessarily predominating even the table game portion,
mm-hmm.
of the floor. There are approximately 47,000 table games in domestically and internationally. And take DigiDeal, for example. It when it sold to IGT, it had about 100 tables,
mm-hmm.
so about 500 seats, and it sold for $60 million. So what it tells you is that it's just simply getting a small penetration,
mm-hmm.
or a conversion,
right.
is very powerful economically.
Mm-hmm.
For TableMax, where it becomes even more interesting is that we have, in addition to the option of selling or leasing a game, we have the ability through our intellectual property to create side bets,
mm-hmm.
and create annuities in the form of jackpots, which are recurring revenues, which means that we really have a very robust business model. Mm-hmm. And that's what we hope will be our competitive advantage.
Okay. And of course, all that goes out the window if server-based gaming really does come into effect and a player can sit down at a terminal and decide exactly what game he wants to play.
The only thing I would say is I don't disagree with that, although I would have to qualify it this way. As you know, server-based gaming is focused primarily on taking what is an individual kiosk, a video slot machine, and making it multifunctional. The whole notion of electronic table games or community gaming is the fact that we have a platform that has had to go through years and years of approval, much like server-based, that in essence becomes that multi-player station gaming experience. So where I would disagree with that comment is that we still will have that platform that's been approved and is adaptable to other content.
Right.
And my feeling is most companies, rather than go through the same multi-year process, would adopt that platform and would basically partner in terms of applications and content.
Right.
So I still think there's, notwithstanding the fact that server-based gaming will make individual slot machines more productive, there is still a significant place in the market for a multiplayer station experience.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, Steve Crystal, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. A very interesting time in the industry here. Table games are growing, both the felt kind and electronic kind. I think you're in the right place at the right time.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Thank you for choosing the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn about any of the issues discussed on this show, go to our website at ggbmagazine.com or subscribe to the industry's most comprehensive newsletter, Global Gaming Business Weekly. We'll see you next week for another edition of the Global Gaming Business Podcast.